Spirit Blade Underground, episode 386. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 386.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. Biblical was the word I was looking for there. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, some thoughts on Fallout 4, as well as some Trek talk about the Maquis, plus a few thoughts about how games can help us see work differently. And just as a heads up, that's actually repurposed content that's been sitting on my hard drive for a long time. I made it years ago as a segment to put on another podcast, and that podcast shortly thereafter became defunct. And so it's just been collecting dust. Well, it became just a little bit relevant today as I make some comments in my thoughts on Fallout about work being and how it's simulated in games, and what kinds of thoughts, productive thoughts, useful thoughts that can bring to mind for us. So I thought, hey, this would be a great time to pull that out, especially since with all the stuff going on, I wasn't able to prepare an In Search of Truth segment from the book of Hebrews this week. So anyway, that's what's going on. Let's get to it. Nice. Another achievement unlocked. I bet I got more achievements than anybody I know.
Yes, sitting in front of a video game for 5 hours a day is quite an achievement.
See, this is why I don't like talking to you.
Then why don't you spend more time with real people?
Because real people don't respond to console commands.
Wow, Peter. You unlocked yet another achievement. You must have more achievements than anyone you know. Behold, you are great, and greatly to be praised.
Yeah, better. Oh my gosh, guys. I have really been looking forward to Fallout 4. Was very excited. I had it pre-ordered and downloaded onto my PS4. It unlocked at 10 p.m. on Monday night, and I just dove right into it. And you can see that experience chronicled on the video that just went up this week, the trial and error video for Fallout 4. So I'll send you to that for, like, I guess the visuals and more details and stuff like that about my experience getting into it for the first time. Right now, I'll just present you with what I would call a first five review. It's my first five impressions of the first 5 hours when it's an RPG I'm trying out. And minutes sometimes when it's not. I don't know. So visuals. The visuals on this. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. I should have made more extensive notes here. All right, no, forging on. No editing. The visuals. Okay, so if you've heard complaints about, like, you know, oh, I don't know, the visuals, you know, they don't look good, the textures, blah, 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 whatever. Okay, if you're into graphics, then don't play, you know, Bethesda RPGs. That's not what you play these games for. There's got to be some kind of sacrifice somewhere with these massive worlds that they're building. Now, maybe you could argue that on PC, you know, if you get, like, an awesome PC rig, mods will come out eventually, you know, so, you know, then great, be a PC player for that. But I like to live a more simple life with less complexities and troubleshooting. I already do enough of that for work on my computer. So I'm a console guy, and I'm fine as long as, like, the graphics are clear enough to represent the world that is trying to be presented to me by the creators, then I'm usually fine with it. So I really enjoyed, you know, the visual design of the world. They've introduced more colors, which I don't know. I could give or take. I was fine with these somewhat more simple tones of Fallout, you know, where it was kind of had like this green wash to the whole thing. You know, it's not that I missed that, but I didn't mind it either. So, you know, the new color scheme is fine. I would say that, like, the animations, they definitely leave something to be desired. The lip animations are not that great. There's just kind of something funny about the way people look when they move their mouths and talk in this game. And there's also, you know, the glitches that are to be expected. I ran into a skeleton once that was many hundreds of years, well, at least a couple hundred years dead. And it just suddenly, its skull started slowly rotating. Really disturbing. That's actually in the trial and error video at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. But I mean, you know, who cares as far as I'm concerned? Because all the other elements just kind of make me forget those, or at least forgive those things. Just like, okay, so we're seeing a little bit behind the curtain of the fact that, yes, this is a video game I'm playing. Lo and behold, surprise, surprise. But when so much of the rest of it is so immersive, I really don't care. The second thing that stood out to me while I was playing was combat. Definitely harder to shoot enemies in this game, and they have much more clever, active AI. I mean, even like rad roaches, they're like jumping around and being unpredictable a little bit, you know, and you've got mole rats that are like bursting out of the ground out of nowhere, and you've got I was going to say zombies, but the feral ghouls definitely taking a cue from The Walking Dead in this game, as they start out as corpses or kind of obscured, covered by junk or whatever, and you walk into an environment and suddenly, and they start like standing up, and it definitely feels like a little page from The Walking Dead, where you're walking in an environment, you think these things are corpses, and suddenly they start growling and moving. So in many ways, the feral ghouls in this game, they don't even feel like feral ghouls. They're redesigned and they behave differently. So I'm wondering how people will feel about that are huge fans of like Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas, because they definitely behave differently in this game. It's still cool, and it makes for some great kind of surprises and tense moments. I would say that overall, when I'm walking through this game so far, I feel much more tense than I have walking through Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas, because enemies are designed much more often to jump out and surprise you, or if not like jump out like a out and out jump scare, certainly just kind of emerge from unexpected places. And so the tension for me is a lot higher. I think that will go down as I continue to play and just kind of get used to it, because right now I'm still trying to figure out, okay, this is a new enemy. How bad can they hurt me? How likely am I to die? Because that's the thing that really I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of dying and having to repeat material. That is the worst thing for me in a video game. I just hate that. I hate that. So I'm actually kind of, you know, more tense because of my fear of that than I am of like being immersed in the moment of, oh my gosh, it's a creature that's after me. It's like, oh my gosh, don't kill me. I don't want to go back. You know, but I mean, it's a mix of both. I mean, it's definitely, I don't want to take anything away from like the jump scares and the creepy aesthetics of the monsters and stuff in this game. They got some good stuff going on, but the combat is definitely more like a shooter. And thankfully, the very easy setting on the combat is so far easy enough that I'm doing okay, because, geez. it's hard to keep up, you know. I don't make contact with enemies near as often as I used to, but I still feel like I'm effective against them, you know. It's not like I'm just totally, you know, like barely getting any hits in, you know. But it definitely is tougher for me. The third thing I noticed, and this is possibly the biggest, if you watch the video that I put up, that this, you might get that impression, but it's not the biggest impression I was left with, but a big one was dialogue and character roleplay. Now they've switched over to the Mass Effect system, where instead of showing you like a list of numbered dialogue responses that you can choose from, and, you know, maybe labeling one as like, here, you're going to use your charisma skill to pull off this one, or, you know, this, if you want to be a jerk, they put jerk or something in parentheses, so you know that you're going to be a jerk, you know, if you say this. It's not near that detailed. It's much more the Mass Effect, like, okay, here's a phrase that represents kind of what you'll say, but whatever comes out of Shepard's mouth might be very different, fleshed out in a different way. It might use a tone that you're you're not expecting, or it might actually, in rare instances, be the exact opposite that you would think based on the little cue that they give you to choose from. And I would say this system is even worse in that regard. They give you even fewer details as you look at your dialogue options. Sometimes all you'll get is yes, no, or the very obscure sarcastic. Okay, well, is that going to be a sarcastic positive response or a sarcastic negative response? What if I don't want to accept this quest, but I'm interested in being sarcastic here? Well, if you choose sarcastic, you might accidentally say yes to something, or, you know, that. So that the dialogue system and the ability to roleplay your character the way you want to play them is very disappointing so far in my experience, as far as my interactions with people. Now, it's a Bethesda game, and so ultimately your actions speak louder than words. You can step away from a conversation and then just mow people down or steal something or just do the opposite of what you said you were going to do, you know? So you still have the freedom in the world to roleplay the way you want to play, and I'll get to that in a second. But as far as like the dialogue interactions and those kinds of character roleplay moments, it's really a bummer. There's also no alternative characterizations or emotions in this game. So I won't give spoilers, but there are spoilers in my video, and I give you a warning about that near the beginning of the video. But I won't give spoilers in this segment here. But something very traumatic happens to you that should make you upset. Really, really upset. And it should not be an emotion that fades quickly at all. It should be an emotion that sticks with you and drives you for the rest of the game. It's a really weighty premise. And yet in your character interactions, you're acting very flippant, as if like, you know, this horrible thing that happened to you didn't actually happen. And you're just kind of like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do this. Yeah, I'll go get this thing for you, you know. Hey, I'm happy to help. I'm just a good guy, and that's what I'm here for. No, oh my gosh, no. Dude, do you not remember what just happened to you? That's a life-scarring event. Good gravy. So, you know, not only are you not seeing that in kind of like the default characterizations, but there is no alternative character options in roleplay for like the distraught emotion that I think you should be expressing a whole lot more often, or at least the very driven and obsessed motive that I think you should be expressing so often in this game. It's not there. It's nowhere. It's gone. And I'm like, this does not make any sense to me. I went back and I tried playing, you know, the first hour or so with the female version, because she had kind of a rougher sounding voice, and I thought maybe, you know, I would get something that would feel a little bit more appropriate from her performance choices. No. Ugh. Not there at all. Really a bummer. I am happy that the karma system is gone. In the previous games, you know, if you did something that the writers of the game determined was good or bad, then you would gain or lose karma, and a little thing would show up that say, go bling or whatever, you know, and say, you did something good, you gained karma. Or you'd hear this sound, brrr, and you'd see a little light guy with devil horns, you know, to say, you did something bad, you lost karma, you know. And the morality systems in general bother me in games, because what the writers of the game might look at in this situation and say this was the morally good option, the morally bad option, I might totally disagree with. It's not often that that's the case, you know, because I think there is a general revelation of morality that God has given all of humanity. We see that in the early part of the book of Romans, that like really we all know the basics, you know, we understand the basics. But when it does get more complex, then sometimes I'm like, no, I disagree with you. I disagree with you that this is a good thing that I just did, or this is a bad thing that I just did, or the worse of these two options, you know. And so I'm glad that the writers, you know, are now like they're just being writers and they're not being philosophers and trying to tell me what is morally good or preferable in a given situation. And instead, the world is apparently just going to be reacting to you. And it doesn't always react to you like I think it should. And that it just kind of shows the glitches of the game. Like, you know, you're not allowed to kill people sometimes because they're important to the plot or whatever, you know. Or they will... not react to you strangely when you've just stolen something from them, and they totally, the menu said that they detected you, they're totally aware that you stole this, but yet they're not ticked off or whatever, you know, so it's a little inconsistent and kind of gamey, you know, in a number of instances, but I still prefer the karma system be gone and just living with consequences and just dealing with consequences. Let's see here. Okay, so moving on, the fourth thing that got my attention is nothing new, but that's the environment roleplay, the immersion roleplay. So it's Fallout. It's about interacting with this sandbox world, as they call it, you know, and it's even more interactive than it's ever been. I mean, all these objects that you run into, every single one of them is useful. It can be scrapped and broken down for components that can be used for cooking or for modifying weapons and armor or building, you know, new stuff and building an entire settlement, and you know, there's all kinds of stuff you can do. So like the loot horde, you know, the loot hoarder in me is very excited to be playing this game, because you could collect all kinds of crap in previous games that wouldn't be worth much except for shooting out of your junk gun, but now everything is useful for crafting or cooking in some way. It's fantastic. There's also no item conditions. You know, in the previous games, your weapons as you would use them or your armor would kind of like wear out just from using it, especially the weapons. Maybe the armor can still get damaged. I haven't figured that out yet. But the weapons, they don't degrade over time. So you can just keep that first pistol, whatever that you find, but you're going to be upgrading it. You're going to be scrapping other weapons or other duplicates of that weapon that you find, so that you can use the scrap bits to upgrade the weapon and add, you know, modifications to it, you know. So that's kind of replaced the old upkeep system, and I really prefer this new system. I think it's really cool. It did take some getting used to. I was like, oh, this isn't going to... I don't need to get, like, three copies of this gun because this one will start degrading. I had to get used to that. But I might want to have those guns later on to disassemble and use the bits to upgrade my weapon, you know. So the environment... I mean, it is just as much Fallout, if not more, in that regard than any Fallout game in the past. The environment and immersion roleplay is fantastic. It's fantastic. The fifth and final thing that kind of came to mind while I was playing this game is the idea of work and the fall. And, you know, all that comes up often when I'm playing Bethesda games or other, you know, role-playing games, or even board games and card games, you know, that have to do with work, productivity, and crafting or whatever, just being productive in some way, like the board game Agricola or Merchant of Venus, you know, or, you know, in Skyrim when you're building armor or growing food or whatever, you know. There's just something cool about doing that in the game environment, because all the crap part of work is removed. And so I just was enjoying the creative process of building my settlement and just enjoying the feeling of being productive, you know. Very often in my work, I can get through an entire day and feel like, oh crap, this was not productive in the way that I wanted, you know. But work will one day not be like that. And I'm going to talk about that, as I mentioned earlier, in the In Search of Truth segment today. So anyway, if you want the full video, which is different content from what you're listening to now, go to youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, and you can experience right along with me the clips from the first 5 hours of the game. The video is less than 20 minutes long, so anyway, go check that out if you like. I want to remind you guys to go check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. For more info about the CGC network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Captain Franson to Corporal McMinnery.
No, sir, it's Ensign McMinnery. I mean, McKinney. Go ahead.
Yeah, so there's this ship that showed up out of nowhere, and now I'm talking to their captain on the big screen. I got this guy... ugly. Anyway, he's really mad. I don't want to talk to him anymore. So I was thinking you could come up and, you know, give it a shot.
Madam Ambassador, how good to see you again. Now, hello again, and welcome to Trek Talk, living proof that Peter Franzen has little to no standards in what he'll broadcast. If you remember back to the Voyager review, I talked about the Maquis, which was one of the foundational concepts of that show, where a group of Maquis were teamed up with Starfleet. And if you don't understand what a Maquis is and why that's supposed to be friction in Starfleet, until Voyager just ignored that. That's what this is about. This is about the Maquis. What caused them, where that all came from, and what it means, you know, to analyze. The story of the Maquis begins with the Cardassians, a new race of aliens that were introduced in Season 4 of The Next Generation. And if we're looking for a real-world analogy to the Cardassians, I would say probably Communist China would be the closest. They are very collectivistic. They tend to think in terms of family and the state first. And they are run by a military dictatorship, which again reinforces that. And service to the state is the value they hold on to highest.
And there's more to life than duty to the state.
A Federation viewpoint, if ever I heard one.
The point of the Cardassians, more than anything else, is that apparently the Federation's been having border war skirmishes with them off and on. Not like a major all-out war, but just hostilities along the borders of their space for at least a couple decades now. Certainly not minor when you're on the border, but on the scale of the large nations, minor wars. They finally had a peace treaty, and lo and behold, as part of this treaty, they kind of changed their borders and swapped it out, so suddenly there were Federation worlds that were in Cardassian space, Cardassian worlds that were Federation-owned now. These people were told to vacate Cardassian space because they're xenophobes. There was one episode of The Next Generation, Journey's End, which is about Wesley, unfortunately, but this highlights exactly what happened, and this was really the start of the Maquis right there. There was a colony of American Indians who had gone there, and of course they did the annoying history is repeating itself, we're kicking them off their land thing. But at the core was something new and unique being formed, which is they decided at the end of the episode that they were going to stay in Cardassian territory. And the Cardassians at the time said,
"But if you leave us alone, I suspect that we will do the same."
However, that policy did not stay, because we found out later that many of the Cardassians taking colonists like these on this world or other worlds that decided to stay under Cardassian rule rather than be relocated were being attacked by Cardassians. Never anything official.
Not a day goes by when there's not some random act of violence against our people. Every Federation colonist knows you do not go out alone at night. Can you imagine living under that kind of fear?
The kind of things that are terrible crimes, but in the national scale, well, a corrupt government won't notice this. And for all that the Federation are the good guys, they tend to be a little corrupt when it comes to the far frontiers. As Sisko said so well in the episode The Maquis, where they were introduced.
The trouble is Earth.
Really?
On Earth, there is no poverty, no crime, no war. You look out the window of Starfleet headquarters and you see paradise. Well, it's easy to be a saint in paradise, but the Maquis do not live in paradise. Out there, in the demilitarized zone, all the problems haven't been solved yet. Out there are no saints, just people. Angry, scared, determined people who are going to do whatever it takes to survive, whether it meets with the Federation approval or not.
And so eventually, they rose up and started fighting back.
Makes sense to me.
And apparently this made them criminals in the eyes of the Federation because they threatened to ignite a large-scale war after all those decades and we finally found peace with the Cardassians. Here go these people trying to start another war. Or, in other words, defend themselves. What I like about the Maquis situation is, while obviously, if you can tell from the way I'm talking, I would side a lot more with the colonists, you can see the Federation side too. Ironically, you have to be a little more like the Cardassians, a little more collectivist to think this way. Is you'd see people who could have been relocated. All they had to do is give up their homes, and they could have been peaceful and safe. And you would say, well, if these people are going to attack my family on the streets, if they're going to poison us, am I really doing the right thing by staying in a war zone when I could be relocated? But on the other hand, you can see their side, which is, I spent 20 years building this place, conquering the land, building a farm or a factory or whatever it is, and now I'm told to give it up because some people, millions of light years away, formed a line on a map that changed things and suddenly my home isn't my home anymore.
People should know when they're conquered.
Would you, Quintus? Would I?
So is that what we have become? A 24th century Rome, driven by nothing other than the certainty that Caesar can do no wrong!
You understand both sides of this issue. And that's one of the fascinating things about the Maquis, is that unlike most Star Trek issues, there is no split right or wrong. You're allowed to make your own decision. However, again, like Star Trek often does, they tended to usually act like the Maquis were mostly in the wrong, and I strongly disagree with that.
He told me the two of you were friends at the Academy.
A long time after.
Until he joined the Maquis.
He betrayed his oath.
to Starfleet.
Now, I like the fact that they make it a debate, and I certainly wouldn't have wanted Star Trek to just turn around and say, my position is the right position, but this was a good conundrum. And those times that they actually acknowledged it was a conundrum...
Why is the Federation so obsessed with the Maquis? We've never harmed you. And yet we're constantly arrested and charged with terrorism. Starships chase us through the Badlands, and our supporters are harassed and ridiculed. Why? Because we've left the Federation, and that's the one thing you can't accept. Nobody leaves Paradise. Everyone should want to be in the Federation. Hell, you even want the Cardassians to join.
Though it was good, and that was actually a really good issue for Star Trek to explore. The Next Generation used a lot of the Maquis because they were often patrolling near Cardassian territory, and Ensign Ro ended up joining the Maquis right near the end of the series, and so we dealt with Maquis issues here and there. Deep Space Nine, of course, dealt with a lot of Maquis. They were there for the beginning of the Maquis. It was one of Sisko's best friends, who was the very founder of the whole organization, as well as one of Sisko's own men using his position to betray the Federation for the sake of the Maquis. Yeah, the Maquis were very important. However, the Maquis were created for Voyager. It was mostly supposed to be a means to create two different crews who had to work together on the other side of the galaxy to get home. However, unfortunately, Voyager was also run by a bunch of cowards who never wanted to challenge the status quo, and so they ended up with the Starfleet is always right, the Maquis are a bunch of criminals, but luckily we get them in line quickly, and very rarely did the Maquis thing actually come up, even though Chakotay said this near the end of the show.
I don't think of you, Orbelana, or the others as Maquis. I think of you as part of my crew.
You may have forgotten, but we haven't.
Well, actually, Chakotay, I think you did forget, because we never saw that come up, once or twice, maybe. Still, for Star Trek, this was a great bit of continuity that kept coming up again and again. They created their own sub-issue, if you will. It wasn't Klingons or Romulans or Dominion or Borg or Cardassians or anything else from the outside. It was their own people, and it wasn't black or white. You could actually see that these people were, they could be villains, you could see them as a bunch of terrorists. You could see them as extremists in our own population trying to rabble-rouse and cause trouble and bring other people down with them. Or you could see them as a bunch of beleaguered people abandoned by their own government and fighting for themselves. It was a refreshingly open-minded take for a show that usually, for as much as it crowed about open-mindedness, wasn't that open-minded. Spoiler alert, if you don't want Deep Space Nine details ruined, skip ahead 1 minute right now. In the end, the Maquis were wiped out almost to the last man by the Jem'Hadar after the Cardassians joined up with the Dominion, mostly because the Maquis had been running freely, and between the Klingons attacking them and the Maquis, they were so beleaguered, they finally joined the Dominion out of desperation, which ended up leading to the Dominion War. And I love all this sort of intergalactic politics and causality of Star Trek. To me, this was Star Trek at its greatest when it did this. But the sad thing is that this terrifying and, you know, heartbreaking end to their storyline happened off-camera.
I heard the same reports. It was a tragedy.
It's a really depressing turn of events because this could have been a two- or three-parter epic where it's like we get as many of them out as we can, but we have to sit there and listen as they're slowly being killed off and, you know, whole swaths of their forces and even their civilians are being killed. And nope, we just hear...
I heard the same reports. It was a tragedy.
Drop the ball on that one, Star Trek. You set up a really good promise and you ruined it at the end. Kind of like The Dark Knight Rises.
Hey, what are you doing for the next couple of months? You want to go to the same cafe in Italy with me every day and wait for my butler?
So, as usual, decide for yourself, and for once you actually have a chance to do that in Star Trek. Are the Maquis terrorists who need to be brought down, or are the Maquis heroes who need to be celebrated? I will say what's interesting is that the few Maquis who survived ended up teaming up with the Federation to fight the Dominion in the Dominion War. So, you could say they were sort of repatriated after going through hell and back. Well, that's about all for this one. See you guys in the future if I don't get killed off screen.
Data collection complete. Activating Usenet 1.0.
Okay, guys, well, something's been cooking up for a while that I've been wanting to tell you about, and now the time is finally right. Christian Geek Central is now going to be partnering with speculativefaith.com. If you've never been to this website, it's a website that's largely about books that are written by Christians in many geek genres. They don't market themselves as like two geeks and four geeks and stuff like that, but I mean, you know, they're dealing with sci-fi and fantasy and horror and things like that that geeks are really into. All by Christian authors. It's possibly the best resource I've found on the web to just find out what's out there in terms of print fiction by you know, by authors writing in Christian geek type of genres. And basically, we're going to be partnering with them in that periodically on the YouTube channel and also on this podcast, you're going to be hearing audio versions of articles that are initially published over at speculativefaith.com, and you'll be getting those read to you by me or by their authors here on this podcast, and then also that audio will be converted into video that will have images of websites and whatever else that might be relevant to go along with that on the YouTube channel. And that's just one way that I'm really looking forward to having more voices represented on this podcast, and especially on the YouTube channel. That's something that I'd really love to see more of in the future. So if by the way, if you're interested in possibly being a contributor, maybe you don't want to manage your own YouTube channel, but you think now and then it might be fun to create some video content that's aimed at Christian geeks, let me know at paeter at spiritblade.com. In the meantime, right now we're not sure when the first video is going to go up, but if you want more information about like this partnership, how it came about, go over to speculativefaith.com and look at the November 9th article, the November 9th article, which is titled Spec Faith to Partner with Christian Geek Central. Again, that's speculativefaith.com. Look at the November 9th article. Okay, moving on now. The CGC Extra Life team did it, guys. Oh my gosh. The big weekend is over. Boy, was it a close one for me personally. Despite getting to bed early Wednesday and Thursday night last week, I suddenly felt sick and had the chills on Friday. Throughout the day, I prayed that God would allow me to rest and heal enough to do the fundraising marathon the next day. And that was a really good thing for me. I wonder if God was using that to get my attention, just kind of, cause I was like, oh, you know, I want to have this thing together and this is like a big event for the community and da, 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 you know, and I had to kind of check myself there, and I was like, you know, those things are good, but really what you ultimately want this to be about, Peter, is just kind of like a call to go out to encourage other Christian geeks to think more and more outside of themselves. That's something that I fail to do so frequently. That's something that I want to lead myself in doing and to lead our community in doing, is just thinking more and more often outside of ourselves and kind of what we got going on in our own little lives, you know? And that's really what I wanted this event to be a call out to Christian geeks to think outside of themselves. I wanted God to use it in that way to be that kind of that inspire component, as I say at the beginning of every podcast, about equipping, encouraging, and inspiring. So I wanted it to do that, and so I was just praying, God, would you heal me and make sure that I am equipped to do that, so that this can be useful toward that end. So anyway, waking up the next morning, I still had symptoms, but you know, I was just like, God, I'm just going to leave this in your hands. It's going to be okay. You know, okay, maybe people will think, oh, you know, Christian Geek Central or Peter Franson or whatever, they're not reliable to produce content when they say they're going to produce content. And I was just like, you know what? I just got to give up my desire to be known or seen or perceived a certain way. I just got to give that up. So God, I'll just make up the hours. Yeah, it won't be as cool as a 24-hour marathon, but you know what? I just want to be on board with what your agenda is, not on my agenda of my own perception goals, you know? Oh man, that is a beast that is hard for me to kill. I have not killed yet. It's a daily thing. But anyway, still had symptoms, just decided to play for as long as I could, make up the rest of the time on another weekend, trusting, you know, that, you know, God's agenda is better than mine. And I'm not going to pretend to know the mind of God, but I wonder if at least part of his agenda was for me to surrender my agenda. Because after I did that,
the weirdest thing. He just seemed to bless my body and give me increasing strength throughout the day on Saturday as my symptoms quickly began to just vanish. So with Yahweh's help, I actually finished my 24-hour video game marathon in stronger physical condition than I finished it last year. Last year, my voice was a wreck. If you listen to the video that I put up on a Christian Geek Central, I started that marathon. I was in great condition, and by the end, I barely had any voice at all. And my voice, you know, was sounding a little bit Batman-y by the end of this marathon this year. But, I mean, it was nothing like last year. It was amazing. And by halfway through my marathon, the Christian Geek Central team reached and passed beyond our goal. And last time I checked, has raised $550 for children in need of urgent medical care. So, wow, that was so cool, so encouraging. I want to thank all of you who donated, and I also just want to praise Yahweh, our God, for positioning you with the resources and the capacity to donate the way that you did. This was a really exciting and rewarding victory. I also want to thank everybody on the Christian Geek Central team. Guys, awesome work, and I already cannot wait to do it again next year. Well, guys, I have now placed by at this time both part 7 and 8 of the Retro live stream segments that I've been put up there. So it's like the death and return of Superman, and my thoughts on actually that story when it came out is included in that video. And now the Justice League Task Force video, which is a fighting game, like a Street Fighter clone. If you haven't seen that, especially if you're a fan of like the new Injustice Gods Among Us, you might find that video interesting. And of course, now my Fallout 4 Trial and Error video has gone up. Again, all that at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And while you're there, if you would like, share, and subscribe, there's folks that are getting connected to the YouTube content that are not connected at all to the podcast. And so with your help drawing attention to the YouTube channel, we are growing and expanding the people that are connecting to just the ministry and the community that's going on through this podcast, through the website, through the forums, interacting with you guys. I'd love to see this community grow and just more people benefit from interacting with you guys and with the content that we're creating for Christian Geek Central. So anyway, that would be a great help to like, share, and subscribe while you're at that YouTube channel. Also, guys, I want your voice and your interest to be a part of this podcast and Christian Geek Central. So whether you've got an idea for a segment already or you just want to be a part of the fun but you don't know what you might want to do, well, we want to find a way to plug you in and let your voice be heard. And it's also a great way to promote what you're doing if you'd like. So for more info, email me at paeter@spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Today, I want to talk about work. Okay, we'll meet halfway and talk about games that are about working. Agricola should be as boring as dirt. Merchant of Venus should be a cautionary tale about trying to run your own small business. So why are these games so stinking fun? Why do I lean forward in anticipation of building a factory on the polluted planet? Why does it feel so good to bring in the harvest of wooden discs? Well, because this world is broken, and I'm waiting for the next one. When humanity chose to rebel against Yahweh and do their own thing, there were consequences. One of them is described in Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 through 19. In the ESV, it reads, "And to Adam he said, 'Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return.'" Now, maybe you're not a farmer, but the curse on the ground affects you too.
The curse adds cost to the effort involved in producing the food we all need, and that cost is ultimately passed down to the consumer. Add to this that we are all sinful, broken people that, you know, are just not very fun to be around a lot of the time. So trying to get things done together is hard because of our sin. Right now, because of sin, work is largely frustrating and far less productive than we'd like. In fact, it's just a pain a lot of the time. But work wasn't always this way. Look at Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. And you know what? It won't always be this way either. Commerce, importing, and exporting may very well be a part of the new heaven and the new earth. And a few verses late in the book of Revelation even imply this possibility. If you look at Revelation chapter 21, verses 23 through 26, it refers to multiple nations bringing tribute of some kind into the New Jerusalem. We're not going to be living in static, bowed positions singing the latest lousy, repetitive worship choruses. We'll be doing stuff. We'll be organized somehow and productive, perfectly productive. In fact, life will be far, far, far better than the most gratifying game we've ever played. But until then, productivity games are like a hint, a preview, a glimpse of what work just might be like a little bit in Christ's eternal kingdom. In Agricola or Merchant of Venus, any frustration is lessened by the fact that, you know, it's only a game. Productivity in those games is insanely high as you watch your effortless labor, unless you have trouble rolling dice and drawing cards, produce fruit at super speed. No weeds to pick, poop to shovel, or sore feet from a long day in the fields. These funny little games about farming and spaceships can remind us of the destiny we were made for. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? Man, I can never get through that last sentence. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind that you'd like? Is it the word that? Should I get rid of that? What should we change? What's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed... Let me try. Okay, let me just delete this. I'm going to try deleting the word that, okay? And we'll see next week how I do. How it makes a difference if that's gone. Anyway, we want to make this show at Hall of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we've got to hear from you to do that. So again, send me an email, paeter@spiritblade.com. Well, I want to thank Matt McKinney for Trek talking on us today. Stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma, guys, after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'm going to go into the Badlands and talk about AMC's new series. We'll see if dipping once again into post-apocalyptia works out for them. And then also, if I can, I'm going to talk about some Hunger Games stuff, reviewing Mockingjay Part 2. I have not reviewed Mockingjay Part 1 at the time that came out. There's other stuff going on that I was covering and it slipped through the cracks, so I'm planning on watching that. I kind of wanted to wait and just, you know, since they're both based on one book that's now split into two different movies. I was just like, you know, I just want to watch these two movies back to back. Don't be splitting up these books like this. That's lame. So I'm going to borrow the first one and then watch the second one hopefully this week and then give you my thoughts on both, or at least the second one on next week's podcast. Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. Thank you so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
I just finished up episode 310 of Farscape Season 4, Coup by Clam. Oh, man, I hate this episode. I forgot. Based on the title, I was like, oh, is it the one with that guy with the big nose? I hope not. I think we already watched that one. Nope, guess not. I got deja vu twice, because I thought I'd seen the big nose guy and the mollusks plot already. And then when I was watching it, I was like, oh, Chiana's like hanging out with the androgynous-looking-ish female, whatever is going on there. Deja vu. But then I remembered that was another story where she was with another Chiana race, whatever, her Nabari. There was another Nabari that was kind of like asexual or something, I think. So it was just weird for her to be with this another like androgynous type person. But I mean, they weren't supposed to be androgynous. That's the ridiculous thing. She was supposed to be passing as a male. And as soon as I saw her, I was like, oh boy, that lady has short hair. Who in the world thought that that was a boy? Who would think that was a boy? For that matter, who would mistake John for a woman when he dressed up in drag later on? But that was funny. This was just stupid. And then I don't like the guy who plays the doctor with the big nose and the boogers coming out of his nose. I like them. You know, I've got no problem with boogers. You know, that's me. I like, you know, nasty, gross body humor. But this guy, I can't even put my finger on it without sounding like a... Is it racist when I say, like, Brits? Because, no, that's not racist, because we're both Caucasian, Anglos, whatever, the crap, Saxon. But, like, this guy felt very British to me. Like, he's got freaking Mr. Winnie the Pooh voice, and he struck me as, like, the kind of guy who would play Doctor Who. Maybe he has. Has this guy played Doctor Who? Somebody tell me. Or been on Doctor Who, or been on Red Dwarf, or some silly British show. Because all of his acting was way over the top, way overdone. It was also too accommodating when he was, as a character, supposed to be dealing with conflict or resistance from other characters. You know, like, I didn't buy that he was being forced by Rigel to eat the mollusks at the end. It just felt like he was, like, a totally willing participant, and he was working with a puppet, you know? And he was accommodating a puppet, you know? And then other times, when he got a gag put on him, he did this little shake of his head as if he was struggling to get free. I'm like, that doesn't look like you're struggling, dude. It looks like you're doing a little silly comic relief head wiggle. I don't know. This is going to sound really rude. His teeth were bad, too. And I guess that's, like, sometimes associated with Brits. I don't know if that's a thing or not. But I've heard that's kind of, like, associated, that they're known for a higher percentage of bad teeth or something. I don't know. But this guy had bad teeth, so I don't even know what it was about him that was making me feel like this guy is, like, British. It's like this invasion of British humor on this Australian humor type show. And British humor, I do not like British humor. It is silly. I can't think of a better word. Whereas, you know, Australian humor is, like, raunchy, you know, or just, like, kind of nasty, or it's got more edge to it or something, you know, it's just more brazen, and I feel like British humor is like, ooh, aren't I being silly? Oh, I'm so silly. I just can't stand it. I hate this episode. I hate this guy. I think the first time I watched it, I was kind of transfixed by how weird he was and couldn't put my finger on why I didn't like him. But I've seen this episode so many times now, I hate having to sit through it again. Hate it. Oh my gosh. We did see the female, the lead of the female underground resistance, whatever the crap. She's actually another actor from the Matrix trilogy. She was in Matrix Reloaded. She was one of the ship captains. But, so, you know, again, more Matrix crossover. Oh, man. And then not only was it a British invasion, back to the doctor guy, but he was freaking Mr. Technobabble. And, you know, talking about the mollusks and, like, the fact that John was in there going, you know, he was like, shall I explain the mollusks to you? And John was like, no, please don't. We give up. We'll pay double if you shut up, you know, whatever. But he went on and did it anyway. And John even called him out, used the phrase technobabble, you know. So I feel like John was representing me in a fiercely strong way. But even that did not save this episode for me from the invasion of British and Star Trek. Like when the Doctor says, "Shall I inform you of the geopolitical situation?" Just like, ah, crap, we had enough of that last episode. Last episode was like, come down on the planet. Oh, let's learn about what their political situation is and then what our role should be in it, you know? And it's the same thing going on here. There's like this political situation. Oh, look at this. Isn't this interesting? On this planet, women are this way, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's, ugh. And it also just kind of like that's another problem with science fiction, like especially like Star Trek inspired science fiction, is like you go to a planet and like the whole planet is the same. You know, it's like this is a planet of water people. This is a planet where men have tails growing out of their head. This is a planet where comedians rule the entire planet. You know, and I'm just like, Earth is a ton more complex. You know, we have so many different cultures, so many different things. So it's kind of like, oh, really? That's the whole planet? The whole planet's like that? Really? I don't know. Something about that just rubs me the wrong way. Didn't used to. Now it does. I'm just like, really? You really want to tell me? Can we just be a little bit more grounded in the reality that I'm used to? Where, a huge planet like ours is filled with all kinds of different people, you know? But I guess then there wouldn't be a reason to explore the galaxy and go to all these different planets, because you could potentially find all this crazy stuff happening on one planet. And this is I don't know why they do that in science fiction. But I just feel like last episode and this episode, these are like Far Trek-y episodes, you know? They are just, there's just a little bit of things here and there that like feed into character arcs and the ongoing story, but barely anything. I'm just like, really, guys? What this feels like to me is the show trying to respond to network concerns that the show was not approachable by people who'd never seen the show before. And so it feels like they're doing a return to, like, really early Farscape, except for the fact that, like, these characters are so much more clearly defined at this point. But other than that, like, the stories of the last few episodes, you know, a number of episodes at the start of this season, are these sort of, like, self-contained type things, and I feel like the show is at this point trying to save itself. And I get why they would have made that choice, if that is, in fact, what was going on here, but at this point, I'm like, guys, your most hardcore fans, the ones that are here, the ones that are telling everybody about this show, are watching it in large part because it's not these self-contained episodes, you know? So to have this awesome season three and such a great closer to season three, you know, at this point I feel like, you know, new people, there's still too much that's gone before that they're not going to be able to get on board and kind of like know what's going on, really. And old fans are like frustrated at this point. At least I was at this point and still am as I watch it again. I'm like, guys, no, you know, this is not what I watch this show for. You know, I certainly don't watch it for freaking Doctor Who rejects. Oh my gosh. The way his eyes were like wide and he was like over blinking and squinting. Everything he was doing was overdone. Drives me up the wall because he's silly. He's not threatening, he's silly and stupid and should have been shot in the head at the end of the first scene he was in. Man. All right, what's the next episode? This is so sad. it does start getting back on track and building momentum to kind of bring the thing to a climax again. Oh, yeah, in fact, it's the very next episode. Oh, geez, yeah. Unrealized reality, that's like a big, kind of like a status quo shift that really sets up what the arc is for the rest of the series. And then Kansas after that, another great episode, Terra Firma, two great episodes in a row. Okay, so now we're getting into some stuff. We are definitely past, I think, all of the crap episodes for this season. Let me look at some other. Twice Shy, I can't remember that one. Mental Is Anything, I don't remember what was going on there either. Bringing Home the Beacon, Constellation of Doubt, Prayer, yeah. There are really no bad episodes at this point. So if you hated this episode as much as I did, it's okay. We're good now. Starting with next time, Unrealized Reality. Oh, but I did forget to mention the one moment in this that I was like, oh, I laughed out loud. I was like, yes, thank you for giving me at least one great moment in this episode. And that, of course, well, maybe not of course to you, but to me, was when John Crichton, dressed in drag, in order to make a distraction, stands on top of a table, calls out to all the ladies in the room, "Hey, ladies, may I have your attention, please? Do any of you happen to have one of these under your skirt?" And he starts pulling up his skirt. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, he's totally going to expose himself. You know, which of course they would do a shot from behind if he was going to do that. And that would have been funny. I was already laughing at that idea. But then he pulls out two pulse blasters and starts going nuts on the room. And it's like, girl power, you know. It's like, oh, that was like two awesome moments combined into one. A great joke and then this awesome, like, you know, going into action hero mode. I mean, oh man, that was great. Did not save this episode though. Okay, next time, Unrealized Reality.